All right, this is a special edition of Football 52, mainly just because we're in the double digits. It's Football 52 here with UNC head football coach Ed Lamb. I'm Brady Hull. Episode number 10, coach. We have made it, well, almost. We're on our way to making it through 10 episodes of this bad boy. I'm pretty proud of us. We've been consistent on this.
Almost to 20%. That's pretty good. It's fairly good longevity.
It's not bad. No, I absolutely love it. And I love doing the podcast stuff, but having you do this with me keeps me accountable to it. Because the show every day, I have to be there. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. I have to be there or we'll just go off the air. This, of course, is a podcast. So having you do this makes sure, guarantees that I am going to be here bright and early with you every single week. And I absolutely love it.
Oh, it's interesting you talk about that because that's one of the things I wanted to talk about today is our bright and early groups that we've got going with our team. We've got we just over the last, I would say, 3-4 weeks just kind of had this idea brewing. We've got a morning weight group, and they've been doing really well academically.
What time are we talking morning? Like,
so we had a 10 o'clock group,
okay.
And that's not exactly morning, right? But
right.
But the suggestion was there, okay, we're an afternoon practice team. That fits best with UNC and the class schedules and things like that. But we've got this 10 o'clock group that was really enjoying the feeling of being up in the morning and getting into this routine, right? And so so what we did is we went through as a staff and anyone who's in what we call the You Run You group. You Run You is a philosophy of, hey, does the head coach run you? Does the academic coordinator run you? Does your position coach run you? No, you run you. If you're a guy that takes care of business in the classroom, which we define as above a 2.5 GPA, term and cumulative, right? That's a You Run You academic guy. And if you're at your target body weight that we've set, and remember, we've worked together on this, players and coaches. We're looking at the top players in college football. We're looking at NFL players at your position and height. What weight is your ideal body weight, right? That's something that you can control almost to the point where, like, the vast majority of our team can get to their target body weight in, like, a week, right? And that may not be a healthy way to do it, but I'm just illustrating the point with absurdity. You can control your academics. You can control your target body weight. And then we've kind of got a lifestyle group too, like guys that, over time as we earn players' trusts, a lot of times they'll open up to us. Like, you know, I'm dealing with this or that. I've got this kind of struggle going on. Could be video games. Could be alcohol. Could be marijuana. Could be, sometimes just dating drama, right? So those guys do best with a lot of structure, right? We've all seen that in our own lives. I've got a brother who, it didn't think it was possible for him, like genetically, to go to sleep at a regular time of night until he joined the Marines. And then, like, you know, they're forcing him up and he's crashing out every night as early as he can, right? So, so we've got these groups now. The You Run You guys, we actually have 34 guys right now. It's a very fluid group because all you got to do is bring your grade. If you want to get out of these morning groups, all you got to do is bring your grades up. And all you got to do is get to your target body weight. And then the last part is, again, a little bit more of a, okay, who has let us know? So we got these three groups. One of them is a breakfast club where they report for breakfast at 7:30 a.m. One of them is a study hall, 7:30 a.m. This is every weekday morning. And then the other one is a morning lift group where these guys, you know, they're kind of, I would say, the lifestyle challenge guys. They get up and we get a sweat in early and then they come back later in the day for practice.
I think you and I talked about it. I love the morning stuff. I'm big into that. Mm-hmm. But what I like hearing you say too is, you know, when we talk about college sports and especially the way things are going with the money and just the focus, especially on football, hearing the focus from you on, hey, get your grades up. We're going to have study halls. We're going to be doing those kind of things. I think that's really encouraging because a lot of people just wonder how serious do collegiate athletes take their studies. We know a lot of them do. We know a lot of them don't. But when you see it starting from the top with the head coach, we always hear head coaches say that's the most important thing. But then when you hear some of the things that you're putting together in place, I think that's really encouraging for a lot of people.
We're just trying to work on every corner of this foundation, you know, try to spend our creative energies thinking about all day long and in our free time, okay, how do we reach out to this individual? It's one thing to stand in front of a team and lecture them all about going to class and dressing right and sitting in the front. And I think all coaches do that. Every coaching staff, I think, has some form of study hall. But, you know, I think we've figured out a way here to improve ours from, you know, having a graduate assistant or a young position coach sitting in a study hall with 30 or 40 guys at night, and it's kind of more like a jail sentence. To, okay, let's get this. We're going to get you up early in the morning, and we've got a book that these coach, and it's our full-time coaches, our position coaches are in there, and we're going through exactly with every student athlete that's in there that's, let's say, earned their way into study hall. We're going through exactly what they should be doing that day.
You mentioned that some of the players are kind of liking the idea of the early morning stuff. Is that something where maybe at some point it's going to be voluntary? It's just like, hey, I'm going to go out and do this, because there's something about it. I don't care what age you are. Getting that, it feels like a head start. It feels like a head start on your day. So do you think that a lot of these guys will just kind of start, you know, adapting their lifestyle toward that early morning stuff?
Yeah. Don't we all know what that feels like to, you know, be you've got an early start on one particular day, or you've got some event going on and you're kind of dreading it, like, man, I got to get up at this hour. And, you know, I think there are some hours that are you know, absurd. I think you're that guy. You're up at 4, right?
Insane. Yeah.
If you got to catch a 6 a.m. flight you got to drive to Denver, you know, from Greeley, like, okay, we're talking about 2:30, 3 o'clock wake up. I don't know that that's a healthy thing.
Yeah, that's probably not.
But I think we all know what it's like to get up a little earlier one day and then finish the task, or just be going about the task and think, this is pretty good.
Yeah.
I feel pretty good. And one of the players the other day told me, you know, he had come to me and said, hey, coach, why am I in this group? And you know, I was honest with him. And, well, let me ask you a couple questions. Am I right about this? Am I right about that? Yeah. And I said, hey, my hope is that you're participating in this now for a couple of weeks and you love it. And if you don't, like, let's talk. I'm trying to do something awesome for you. I'm trying to be awesome for you in the end. And he was like, no, I got to admit, I mean, I was kind of offended that you put me in this group, coach, because I'm not sure how you see me. But yeah, I mean, I get done with our lift. So now we've got the morning group, the morning lift group at 8 o'clock in the morning. And they have to be there, you know, early for that.
Sure.
So it's even earlier than that to get in there and get their warm up and weigh in and stuff like that. So yeah, he told me, you know, after the lift, I've been going home, been doing a little homework. Like, I've got everything done by 10 a.m. The stuff that used to take me all day. I've got my lift in. I've got my homework in, and I'm ready to go. Can't wait for practice in the afternoon. So I was like, hey, that's what I'm trying to do for you.
I am telling you, if you ever need a speaker, because I'm not going to be a specialist in any other thing other than the fact that I just set an alarm really early and I get up. It's amazing. By the time I get to work, I usually get here 7:30 or 8 to the station, but I've been up for 3 hours, you know, and so for me, It used to be 6, and then it was 5, and I started it with my child because he would get up so early, and then we'd have rough nights or whatever. So I didn't know if I was going to get to exercise, whatever, that day. So I just decided the only way to ensure I'm going to get this stuff done, get up really early, get a little exercise in, get some reading in, and then I'm answering emails for an hour and a half or whatever. And then by that time, you know, the rest of the day, I've got more time for prep. It's crazy how much you can get done when you just dedicate to getting up a little bit earlier. But I do not suggest the 4 a.m. You're probably right. Most people would look at me and think that I'm not well. I've been asked that before. So you do what you got to do.
We call it getting a jump start on the human race. Yeah, players kind of like it when we say that, and I think they feel it.
Yeah, I love it. Coach, let's talk a little bit about the scrimmage. You had your first scrimmage on Saturday, and I kind of just want to start getting into maybe whatever details you can give us on that side of things, positions to look out for, guys we should be looking out for. And again, it's spring, so you can only take so much from it, but it is a crucial time when it comes to college football.
Absolutely. The NCAA describes a scrimmage as greater than 50% of the practice time devoted to tackling or full contact football. And so we only get 3 of those throughout the 15 spring practices that are allowed. So we have to be kind of strategic. Where do we put those? Obviously, we want 1 of the 3 on the spring game. People are going to come and watch that, and it's kind of disappointing if you're out there playing flag football. You know, so we want to keep one there, and then we have to strategically place 2 others. So we decided that the second Saturday would be not just a day where we tackled. You get eight tackling days over the 15, but five of those have to be less than 50% full speed tackling. So then the weather was pretty poor this last Saturday, and so when I put we always put the practice plan in front of the players in one form or another, and I don't always do it at my portion of the meeting. I've got a team meeting that we start the day with every day, and when I put it up there, I said, "Okay, fellas, here's the practice plan. We've got our regular stretch period, and then we got 5 minutes of get your A ready." Because
what does that look like? What is that 5 minutes like?
So that's position oriented. But okay. I said in front of the players and coaches, hey, look, we're hoping it's going to be like the worst weather we could expect on any playoff day. And it didn't end up being quite like that. The wind was, 10 miles less than forecast. We were supposed to get rain and we kind of got more of a drier, a little snow flurry. It was a challenge from a ball security standpoint, and there were some real challenges on playing. But I wouldn't say that it was like, one of the 10 coldest practices or games that these guys have had here. Yeah. So it didn't quite work out how we were hoping that way. I mentioned to you before, we wanted to get some cold weather practice, some bad weather practices in. But we expected that this is hours before it was slated to start. So we were just going off the forecast in our early morning meeting with the players. And so I told them, you've got that 5 minutes, and then we're not going to be out there today doing individual. The only reason to practice in weather like this is because we will play in weather like this. So let's go play football. So the practice plan typically would have stretch, you'd have individual, you'd have some type of other kind of warm-up or pod, 7-on-7, inside run, some instructional periods. The players loved it because it said 10 minutes of stretch, 5 minutes of get your A ready, and then it's 90 minutes of scrimmage. And they had a really good time with that. We only had two different scenarios in the scrimmage. One was put the ball on the 50-yard line. If the offense scores any type of points, then it's a point for the offense. We kept score up on the scoreboard. If the defense gets a stop, then it's a point for the defense. So there were a lot of natural situations created in that, short yardage, red zone, et cetera. And then the other situation was coming off of our own 25-yard line, backed up on offense, can we get 20 yards and at least flip the field? And then if we did, we would flip that, blow the whistle and start a new scenario, a new drill, either at the minus 25 or at the 50-yard line again.
Was it a balanced battle back and forth, or did the offense or defense, which one took the day?
Really interesting. So the offense came out on fire, and two of our quarterbacks, Hank Gibbs and Peter Castelli, that really made some things go with their legs, got out of some third and longs with their legs, and kept some drives going early. And I think the offense jumped out to a 5-1 lead. And that's the first time that's happened in my time at UNC. We were pretty challenged on offense last year. They thought we weren't great on defense, but we played hard, kept the team in games. But as the season wore on last year, it really became evident that some of these teams that we seemed to match up a little better against, Portland State, we go all the way into the fourth quarter with the lead in that game. Idaho State, where we had a kind of a fluky thing happen going in for a score, but that game was really competitive.
Yeah.
And then you look at what the other teams in our league did to Cal Poly, Portland State, and Idaho State, and they were putting up like 50 points in the first half. Well, we would play those other teams and it would be a close game, a close, low-scoring game all the way through, And so it was really an indication, I think, to the whole team of like, okay, we got a defense that'll hang in there and play hard. I don't know that we're great or we're going to win any games on defense, and we didn't. But, offensively, we're just really challenged to put whole drives together and score. So to come out this past Saturday, I think even for the defensive guys, they were like, okay, whoa, we've got a challenge here and we've got some stuff on offense. Offense, I think, jumped out to a 5-1 lead. That means they won five series or situations compared to the defense's one. And then the defense started roaring back, mostly because of turnovers, which is another great, at this point in spring, another great lesson for us. Something we work really hard on, something I know that we're preaching. We start every practice with ball security drills on offense, but we turn the ball over a bunch of times. Part of that was probably the wind and the weather and the cold. The ball gets a little harder and stiffer, but we've got to be prepared for that, and we were absolutely not.
You, it's got to be tough to evaluate, too, because you as the head coach, you want the offense to rock and roll, but you want the defense to rock and roll. You want it both. Do you come out of that kind of a day where you feel pretty good about both sides, even though, excuse me, at one point, one of those sides had to lose? I mean, defensively struggled at first, and then they kind of recovered. Do you kind of feel like, hey, I feel pretty good about both sides at this point?
Yeah. You know, I think I've talked to you about this before, but you know, every turnover or takeaway, we call them takeaways on defense, turnovers on offense. I think as a head coach, I have to look at it and say, okay, was that more turnover or was that more takeaway? Was that a very preventable mistake where we just carry in the ball in an irresponsible way? Did we try to force a throw? Or, you know, sometimes you just get, you know, contact just at a moment where a quarterback or a guy in a vulnerable position coughs the ball up and he was trying to carry it correctly. The effort was there. I thought that was pretty evenly split, but there were still too many turnovers. So okay. I'm happy about the takeaways, but turnovers are they're that's a symptom of a poorly coached team. And so we've got to improve in that area.
Was that more interceptions or fumbles or kind of a mix there? What were the turnovers? What was that like?
We had one, there were two interceptions, but one of the interceptions went right through the hands of a receiver, right? And so that's one of those ones where, okay, well, when we're looking at how do we correct that, that's a receiver mistake. The other quarterback interception was a quarterback mistake. It was a bad read, came out of his hand wrong, and didn't quite get his feet set. So there were a lot of things going on that the quarterback could have prevented there. And then we had three fumbles. And more than that, we had a bunch of, you know, the way we're supposed to carry the ball in traffic wasn't being done. So a lot of really good learning tape for that offense, video for that offense, because, you know, they would have won the scrimmage on the overall point system if they had just taken care of the football. They were moving the ball so efficiently, so effectively, and then they lost the entirety of the scrimmage, at least in the competitive way that we had set up the point system. They lost to the defense because of the takeaways.
What do you do to correct fumbles? I mean, you see the old movies, where a guy just carries the football around all day, every day. It's a mental thing too, because you kind of have to think about it, but you don't want to think about it too much. What is that process like for you, Coach?
I'm really glad you asked that question because it gives me a chance to explain kind of the strategy that we go about it throughout a spring camp. Okay, so early on in spring camp, so the first day of spring ball that we practiced, every player on the team, offense, defense, specialists, everybody, right when they walked on the field, we had a ball security drill set up where we kind of simulated an open field run. So nobody's stretched out yet. And so it's just, hey guys, come out here 50%. I want to show you, teach you, make sure you know how to carry the ball high and tight in the open field against your chest. And then we run them through the blaster. If you know what that is, it's kind of a chute with some plastic arms, rubber arms sticking out. Running backs use it a lot. So they had to go high and tight in the open field and then two hands in traffic through the blaster back into the open field with high and tight. And then we simulated crossing the goal line again with two hands on it. Such a critical time of your ball carrying. And so and that's what it's all – it's about fundamental instruction for the first part of spring camp. But what these guys are going to start hearing very quickly as we get about 8-9 practices in and we only have a handful of practices left is, look, fellas, we've done our part fundamentally. I can pick out any guy in this room, right, and you can tell me exactly what the fundamentals are for ball security. At some point, we've just got to play the guys who carry it correctly. And that's, I think, when it's really going to show up in those last few practices is who has habituated themselves to put two hands on it in traffic.
Why do you think, Coach, talk to us about this? Players, I mean, they get in college and the pros, we see it. Guys just get known for fumbling the football. And the armchair guys like me and, you know, we're sitting on our couch going, why does it keep happening? He knows it's an issue. Surely he's thinking about it, yet there's a fumble. What happens in that process? Is it a mental thing at that stage, or is it kind of a mixture of mental, but you're not doing the little things right when it comes to just hanging on to the ball?
I think it's two things. It's number one, it's fundamentals. Who can carry the football in the correct way? And most coaches are going to say it exactly like you hear me saying it. You know, it's high and tight in the open field that allows you to get out and run full speed, but then you got to get two hands on it. You got to protect it with your off arm. You see a lot of guys that are fumblers, they want to protect themselves with their off arm. They're kind of directing traffic. And I hate that the Heisman Trophy is stiff, what the players will call a stiffy, you know, the stiff arm, because that's not a good way to carry the football in traffic. I mean, it's a fine way to break a tackle on one defender, but how often are you out there against one defender? There's always a guy coming from behind. And, I think we've all seen many times where a guy's kind of, doing that straight arm deal and gets stripped from the other side, or the ball gets poked out on the other side. So there's the habit, fundamental part of it. And then I think there's a physical part. Well, a lot of guys, when they put two hands on the football, don't move as well. Nobody moves as well as they would. But, they're not able to make their cuts inside the line of scrimmage as well if they're not waving that off arm around, right? And then there's some guys with smaller hands and shorter forearms, and I think that sometimes can be an issue as well. I've even had some guys I coached that their biceps were, their forearm wasn't long enough for the size of their bicep, and so it put an extra strain on that. So I do think there's just some physical components as well, balance and length of the forearm, size of the hand, strength overall, but not being too bulky in the bicep. There's a lot of things to consider there.
I was just going to ask too. Are there specific workouts that you can do? Obviously, we know strengthening your arms, you're going to be able to hold on to that football tighter. But sometimes, I always think about a guy like Tim Tebow when he's throwing the ball. We always wondered, is it because his biceps are just massive and that's why his release takes forever? Are there certain workouts, or maybe you tell guys to tone it down in a certain area because of that kind of thing?
Every day for the guys who carry the ball as part of their regular job, every day is a ball security day. There's a specific individual drill set up for it. There's more of that coaching than anything else. That's all of our coaches know. There are no boundaries with coaching ball security and hustle. And so if the safety coach sees a running back not carrying it correctly, it's not out of bounds for him to say something. Just a reminder, hey, ball security. And you hear that all the time with practice. So I think as coaches, you get what you emphasize. I know we emphasize it a lot. I know it'll improve throughout the spring.
Coach, are you prepared to talk to us a little bit about depth chart stuff? Because I'm really interested. We're getting a lot of questions about the quarterback. I'm wanting to kind of know what that situation looks like right now.
We've got three guys that have experience. Shea Kuykendall played the most for us last year toward the end of the season. We had our top two quarterbacks on the depth chart hurt. Jacob Sermon went down, and then Hank Gibbs just almost immediately in the Montana game comes in and shows some promise, throws a long pass down the sidelines. Hank's a big guy, athletic, 6'6", 240 pounds, very athletic and fast, can bring a different dynamic. Sermon was an elite passer, and we weren't quite ready as a team to bring out his full potential. I didn't think we protected him very well. I didn't think we had a lot of weapons around him. But he's a pocket passer, and it's tough to win when you've got a pocket passer and you can't protect pocket very well. And we didn't have a lot of other help around him. But when he went down, I thought potentially it could open up a spark for us, because Sermon won the job and we were committed to getting better around him. But when Hank came in, like I said, with his physical attributes, he's one of the fastest players on the team. He's one of the strongest players on the team. He can throw the ball a long way. There's just a lot of ability there with Hank. And for him to go down, obviously incredibly disappointed for him and everybody, went out with a concussion and was out for the last, basically 3 weeks of the season. So Shea Kuykendall came in as the third quarterback. We played the last three games with our third. And Shea's a battler. Shea's a warrior, and was ready mentally in every way. And I thought brought a spark to the team in terms of I thought by that time in the season, we had developed a reputation around the league as we're not an easy out. It doesn't matter whether you're the fifth ranked team in the country or, just somewhere battling at the bottom of the conference. UNC is going to give you everything, give you a full 60-minute game. And that was, that's not our highest aspiration. I'm not bragging about kind of having that reputation, but that's what we had become at that point, is a team that, though our record was horrid, we weren't going to quit. And we put a scare into a lot of teams. And I thought Shea just embodied that. He knows he's the third quarterback, but he came in there and operated to the best of his ability, and I think earned a lot of respect amongst the coaches and players.
So he's sitting kind of at three right now. Is that where Shea is at this stage?
Yeah, in the spring, because there are so many reps to go around, and we're not preparing for a game. There's no game plan really. I think probably all three of those guys feel like they're really battling for the starting spot.
Fairly even right now.
Yeah, and we want the whole team dynamic to be that way in spring ball. I would say that, Shea finished last season as the starter. And so just the documentation of it on paper, you know, until somebody else is actually named a starter, then you know, Shea finished the season as the starter. Obviously, you know, Hank's going to have issue with that because he was higher on the depth chart and just injured, and then Peter was ineligible. So Peter was a, you know, a very highly ranked, highly recruited prospect out of high school, originally signed with Utah, and he's transferred a couple of times now looking for the right place, and I believe he's found a home here, and he's had a really good spring camp so far.
Well, I'm impressed. You talked about a couple of the guys, but with Hank Gibbs, like that size. I mean, he's a big human being. What is he, 6'5", 6'6"?
Yeah, he's 6'6". He's all of 6'6". He makes me feel small. And you, I mean, you know, sitting here, I'm a full 6'4",
yeah,
and 220 pounds. And yeah, when I'm standing next to him, I mean, Hank hangs out with the offensive line. When our weight room is set up when the guys are lifting, the strongest guys are at the first rack. And this is assignments. Like, you earn your way up the rack order. And Hank's one of those guys in rack. Like, we have rack A1, A2, A3, A4, and then it goes to B1, B2, B3, B4. Hank's in that A group. And he really gets after it in the weight room. Peter's an elite sprinter. You know, Peter was a sub-1100-meter guy in high school and not really a track guy first. So when you're talking about a sub-1100-meter guy, like, you're getting into college competition times in the 100 meters. Peter is one of the three, four fastest players on our team, including the cornerbacks and wide receivers.
Coach, you talked about last year with Jacob Sermon being primarily that pocket passer. And obviously you see the struggles there if your line's struggling, can't protect him in that pocket. Is this offense changing a little bit then, where obviously you're still going to do a lot of work inside the pocket, but you're going to set it up in a way for certain guys, as you mentioned, some of these guys are big, powerful, some of them are really fast. Do you see your offense changing a bit from last year to this year as far as, you know, being able to just make plays outside of that pocket?
It would change. Even the plays that are exactly the same, because obviously we're going to have carryover consistency. You don't, like, even I just want to illustrate it with an example. You know, even Air Force, who's completely bought into the, you know, the triple option, they've got a 2-minute drill that looks a lot like what everybody else does, where they spread the ball out and they got to throw it around. You know, they got to make a comeback. So I think, you know, even the plays that are exactly the same as last year look different. Because, you know, on a third and long pass that we had to have, you know, where we're not saying, hey, let's try to throw it underneath and take some advantage of some available underneath yardage and see if we can run for the first down on a short pass or something, and then but protect our right to punt rather than take another sack or something. You know, in those situations last year, Serm was either going to find the receiver and we were going to protect it and connect down the field and get the first down, or he was going to take a sack or I guess an incomplete. You know, I mean, there's two out of the three options were pretty bad there, and we dropped back for a pass. Very rarely did he have the ability, or was it part of his game, to kind of, you know, tuck that thing and create extra time in the pocket or get vertical. And it's not that he wasn't capable of doing that. I mean, a lot of times different quarterbacks, you can line them up and run 40s, and there's not a huge difference in speed. But it's just the way a quarterback has built their game over time and kind of the clock that goes on in their mind. Serm was confident in his arm, as he should be. I thought he had a very elite arm. Peter and Hank are going to be a little more stingy. Like, if your coverage is not on point, they'll throw the ball in there. But if the coverage looks tight, they're like, wait a minute, you don't have enough guys for me. And it's like, it's pretty immediate that they decide, okay, I'm gonna try to make this happen with my feet.
Yeah, and I think that's what's so interesting too. When you have a quarterback, it can be easier in some ways, I'm sure, when you have a guy that can scramble and can run around. But you're also, you got to work with that offensive line too. They have to be prepared for that because those things change. Their blocking changes. That's why you see a lot of holding calls too when a guy takes off and runs, and offensive lineman's now put in a different position. So it can, there's benefits there, but there's also a little maybe not extra work, but different work when it comes to developing an offense.
You know, take anybody who's like studies the NFL. If you take, like, I think probably one of the better defensive lines over the last couple of years has been San Francisco, right? Mm,
yeah.
They're really active in their pass rush. But when you watch them play, you know, against Baltimore or Kansas City with that type of quarterback, it changes the way they rush. And we call it a frontal rush. I think most teams now, since the more mobile quarterbacks have come around, you've got to find a way to get a frontal rush. You can't just scream up the field, turn the edge, and expect the quarterback to still be standing there. Like these quarterbacks, they've got a real knack for finding the soft spot in the pocket and then delivering a pass, or finding the soft spot in the pocket and then taking off. And so the defensive line has to be much more cognizant, and they have to play less aggressively. And I think that that really helps the offensive line, to answer your question. When you can, and then at that point, if we can bring an effective run game component, if we can establish some danger on the outside where now linebackers have to drop deeper into zones, and that quarterback's still sitting there with five blockers and only four defensive linemen, you know, in the passing game, that's a great opportunity to run the football and add rushing yardage and production to the game.
Final one on the quarterback question, Coach, because I'm just going to keep asking about that depth chart. I always want to know. When will you know? When do you make that decision? Are you a guy that's, hey, I want the starting quarterback to know when spring is over, or I want there still to be a battle when we start practice coming up, you know, late summer, early fall? How do you view that?
What I think is important, you know, Justin Walterscheid and I have been working together for a long time. What I think is important that is that every day the depth chart is clear to the players. And so, you know, I would like there to be a clear 1, 2, 3. But right now what we've communicated to those guys is, look, you're all competing. Now's the time to get better. And the depth chart, if we were to play a game right now, okay, the way that we see it right now, Shea's operating the whole offense on a pretty high level. Peter and Hank have shown to be very dynamic. Peter won the first scrimmage. Right. And so going into this week, Peter's going to get every opportunity to be the full time guy, the full time starter. And yet, you know, if Peter or Hank are the guy, we got to have another guy ready to go, because they're out there putting their body on a line just like a linebacker. Yeah. I mean, they're taking hits, they're delivering hits. And so I think all three quarterbacks right now, they really see a role for themselves. And that's how we want it right now. At the point where that would be disingenuous for them to be thinking they actually have a shot, that's when the communication has to come out. Hey, look, you're a three or you're a two, and we need you to buy into this, or, you know, let me know if this is not going to work for you.
All right, so shoot me a text when you have it for sure, because I want to know.
I get the feeling that answer was not satisfactory.
No, honestly, it sounds like it's open. Because each guy has their unique strengths right now. Maybe at this stage, Shea is more comfortable. Hank is massive. And as you said, Peter's pretty quick, and he won the first scrimmage. So to me, it just listening to you, it sounds like it's really even right now, that they're small, just kind of neck and neck.
Yeah, small sample size. I'm gonna take a shot here at being more clear for the purposes you're looking for. I'm used to talking to the players.
Who's starting next year, first game?
Not next year, but this week. If we played this week, based on the small sample size of spring practice that we've actually had where the quarterbacks were live, Peter would be the starter.
Kay.
Hank would have a definite role, and Shea would be the third. And that's based on one scrimmage. And we've got to make sure that, you know, we keep this thing open, because in my mind, you've got three guys who are all capable.
I'm going to tweet it out right now. Starting quarterback has been announced. No, I won't do that. I just think, again, I know it's spring, so evaluating these positions, and I think I asked you last week as far as key positions that you're looking at, and we haven't really talked about the quarterback in detail just yet. One last question with Hank, just because of the size, his background with Wyoming, are there similarities to Josh Allen at all? I mean, you take a guy with the size and where he was before, I have to ask.
Yeah, he patterned, that's his favorite player and his favorite team. He patterns his game.
He like looks like the guy, kind of. I mean, his profile picture and everything.
Yeah, so. Very much. I coached a game against Josh Allen that we played when I was coaching at BYU, played against him in the Poinsettia Bowl down in San Diego. And I think there's a lot of I think every player should have a reference group. I've talked to our players about this before, and sometimes a lot of these guys need to elevate their reference group. You know, I think what we all do when we first come into a college or high school football team is look around and go, okay, who can I compete with? Who's like me? Who are some of the older guys that I'm trying to emulate? And the more we can elevate that reference group, okay, well, why not compare yourself to the best in the game, the best in the world? And Josh Allen at that body type and size and arm strength and ability to run at that size, that's exactly who Hank should be comparing himself to.
When you coached against Allen, did you? I mean, I don't know how he played in that game specifically, but did you see it? Did you? Because I'll be honest, I watched a lot of Wyoming football, and I thought, here's a tough dude, gritty. He can make plays. I had no idea this guy's going to go, what, top seven pick, and then obviously he's one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. I'm not very good at evaluating that, especially when you look at Mount West teams or Big Sky teams going, okay, they have the, I don't know, but obviously look at Josh Allen. Did you know at that point?
That would be unfair for me to say, like, I saw exactly what he would be today, but he was already on NFL radars, and as coaches, we're watching not just a game or two or three, like we're watching the whole season.
Sure.
And we're preparing, especially for a bowl game. You watch the whole season, and we could see that he was an elite quarterback. He's got a quick release. He's tall. He can see over the line of scrimmage. He made that Wyoming team that year the team that they were. I can't remember if they were an 8 or 9 win team, but you know, it was kind of a breakthrough for the Wyoming program and a new coach up there in Craig Bowl. He was fairly new at that time.
Yeah, sure.
And they'd established themselves as a really good football team with a really good quarterback. We ended up, the game went right down to the wire, and I thought we had a pretty good team at BYU that year, and ended up getting an interception from Josh Allen on almost the last play of the game. But he was driving in a cold, windy rainstorm down in San Diego, and he was driving the team down for what would have been the winning score.
He's one of those guys that I think, like you were talking about over the weekend, he's praying for bad weather because he does pretty well in that bad weather. So I think he's one of those dudes.
I think the worse the weather, the more it becomes a big man's game.
You said something, and this is kind of how this goes sometimes. You say things, and then I latch on to certain things that I want to go back to. You talked about when you're preparing for a guy like Josh Allen, you're clearly watching film throughout. It's not just like the last game, whatever. How much right now, if any, Do you pay attention to what's going on with other Big Sky football teams?
Not so much the entire Big Sky on a daily basis. Definitely our early opponents. We're watching video. At this level, there's not a lot of media that we can rely on.
Sure.
Especially at this time of year, there's just, you know, I think coaches are always going to be kind of like somewhat guarded, right? You just saw that from me a few minutes ago. Like, I'm not going to give the scouting report to Incarnate Word on who our starting quarterback is.
That was going to be the next question, man.
But, so coaches are a little bit guarded. And then it's not like there's, you know, at a Power 5 school, you're going to have 30, 40, 50 members of the media at every practice, at least the practices that are open. And so stuff really leaks out more at that level. Here, I think there's not a lot of information. So it's more about watching video in the way that I need to answer this question. And our first three opponents, we're watching video on them, or at least considering their systems in what we do, and knowing what our offense and defense and special teams are going to look like early in the season. We're considering that on a daily basis.
I'll probably ask every week now, Coach, because I got to know. No, I do have to ask this question. You just said it too, talking about coaches and the way you guys don't want to give out that depth chart. You want to hang on to that as long as you can, because you want teams to go, because the three quarterbacks you're talking about seem like they're maybe similar in some areas, but all have different skill sets, as you outlined. You want, I would imagine, you want Incarnate Word working a triple. You know, you want them scouting all three of those guys and putting not 100% of their focus on Peter or whatever, but they're spreading that out. So I see why. But then, of course, you want to be guarded on the quarterback side. Is that how you feel with the entire depth chart too? Like, I kind of need to, we're not going to release that bad boy until we have to.
Yeah, if there was no chance for a quarterback to be competing, he would know it. You would know it. Anybody that asked would know it. And we actually have, like, I can start to name the other guys. Caden Box is a new—
I was going to ask about the youngsters.
Yeah, a new freshman for us, enrolled mid-year. And he's really having a really nice spring camp. But he's not a realistic starter right now for next season. And so that's why I didn't bring him up in that conversation. Richard Stallworth is another young quarterback just going into his redshirt freshman year. And, right now he's not in that mix. And so we've communicated that to him. I definitely think that, the right thing to do is if guys are in the competition to be the starter, they need to be discussed that way. And at whatever point they're not, I don't have a timeline in mind. I would like to say right now, at this point in spring ball, we've got a clear starter. It would really help from a leadership standpoint. It would help from a preparation standpoint. But we're not there. These guys still need to compete it out and earn that job, and it hasn't been earned yet.
You're seeing the pesky side of me coming out here, Coach. Yeah. The media side of me is coming out today.
Well, I think it's a popular question.
Sure.
Like people want to know. You hear the term coach speak, people get frustrated. You know, I've kind of in the past, like, I consider myself somebody who's like really open that way. And if somebody says that I'm somebody that talks in coach speak, I'm like, man, really? Like, I really try hard not to
do
that.
No, I don't think you're guilty of that. I mean, this podcast would prove the opposite of that. But I also understand why. And again, we're what, a couple of weeks into this thing on the spring side of things. So I don't really expect you to know, but I had to ask. You know? I had to go there.
I mean, I can do it. Like, you know, if people like to hear that, we could change the name of the podcast to coach speak. I can just we got a really good football team.
Yes.
We got really good football players.
Gonna play hard.
We
got
to score the football. We're going to fly around. We're going to make things happen. We're going to be aggressive.
Okay. I do have to ask, speaking of coach speak, a lot of people really want apparently to listen to a certain coach in the state speak at dinner. Did you see that? And again, I'm not knocking ways to raise NIL. I mean, you got to do what you got to do. But there's a dinner coming up in south of us here in Boulder. And to sit down with Coach Prime, it's like $20,000. What does that do to your brain when you see something like that? Do you think, hey, we need to get our dinner going here. Let's raise those prices up.
Well, here's the first thing that I thought of. The disparity between resources and the appropriate strategy, because I'm not going to sit here and say that's not an appropriate strategy. If they can pull that off at Colorado, fantastic.
Yeah, if you can get $20,000 to go sit with Coach, then I suppose go for it.
Yeah, yeah, that's fantastic. I you know, our practices are open. I invite everybody, and we'll normally have like three or four people come to our practices.
Yeah.
So, and that's free. So I don't think we're going to be able to pull off a $20,000 a seat dinner, to sit with me. But here's the deal: you take that huge disparity, that huge gap between the way they're raising funds or their abilities to raise funds, and what they're going to use for NIL inducements in recruiting, because that's really what it's coming down to now, and then what we have, which is next to nothing. Here's the cool thing: the talent disparity between us and them isn't that same gap. And that's the first thing that I thought is, wow, okay, there's a lot going on there. These are the leader. You know, Coach Prime is, I think, a leader in the thought of what's coming next, right? And he's going to push the envelope on that. We're just doing a completely different thing here. We've got a fairly modest amount of NIL money, and I've already explained it to our players. Our NIL money is going to be distributed equally amongst those who have 100% attendance in the summer workout program. I don't know of anybody else doing it that way, but I think it's the most appropriate way for us. Like, I'm not in terms of NIL, I'll put it in investing term. I'm not a day trader. I'm not looking for a guy to come in here for a year or two. I'm not pumping money in looking for this huge quick return. I'm investing. I'm an investor, not a day trader. We're putting in whatever resources we have, fairly modest resources. We're putting it into the whole team, giving everybody a chance to benefit from it. That's how I think we've got to build it at UNC. And I would feel differently if I were somewhere else.
I was watching, I think it was during the national championship game on Monday. One of the players was on a commercial. And I looked over at my wife and I said, see, I don't like that. That's them probably going out, figuring that out on their own. They've got somebody helping them. They get Burger King to come in and, do an ad with them. That to me is name, image, and likeness. But as you're talking about this whole, let's set up the bank here and then we're giving you money to come here, that's where I think it changes from NIL to free agency.
Yep, it's exactly. It's moving towards the it is. It's professional right now, and it's just a matter of all the legislation and the language catching up to that. And then potentially getting to the point where there's something like an equitable structure of a salary cap or whatever would be, most appropriate for this level.
Coach, I was getting a lot of these questions over the weekend, and you can say, hey, let's move on, let's not talk about it. But this guy's name keeps coming up in my message things on social media, David Hogue. People just kind of want to know what's going on with that guy, because obviously when he's on the field, when he's healthy, he's a stud. He's a really tremendous player.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, David's working hard to get back on the field. He's not back on the field consistently yet. He's had some setbacks. We're hanging in there with him. For us, having not been around here when he did play several years ago. It's that part really. We recognize what he's doing now, what he's currently doing. He works He works really hard in the weight room. He's one of our strongest players. He's one of our most explosive players. And so we're coaching him up in every way that we can. We don't want to be like, you know, out on a podcast or in the media talking about, okay, here's the exact injury struggles that a guy's dealing with. I anticipate that he's going to play and play really well this season. But to be fair, I expected that last year, and we had a setback.
I think all of us expected it last year. Yeah. Sometimes, I guess, and we don't have to get into details, but sometimes those injuries or whatever it is can just stay with you way longer than you expected.
That's right. Yeah, it's unpredictable that way. But he's on track. That's probably a good way to say it. Really on track. And I think my relationship with him, our coaching staff's relationship with him, is growing to the point where there's mutual trust. You know, he's a guy that could probably go out and get an NIL deal. Certainly, he's well known, at least in our conference. And just to physically meet him on what would be like an official visit recruiting trip, I mean, any coach would kind of go, whoa, okay, that's what a guy's supposed to look like.
Yeah.
And act like. He's got a great presence, energy about him, very intelligent. You know, so I think, sky's the limit for what he could accomplish for us. But, you know, we just right now we're just trying to not put a lot of undue pressure. Like, I think sometimes what guys accomplish in their freshman or sophomore year can be a detriment until they get their mind around, you know, where are they at currently?
Sure.
And that's really what I'm trying to communicate with David is let's leave the past behind. In terms of the expectations for this year is totally separate.
Well, and I'll be real honest, and with no disrespect meant toward David, we started talking about, there's part of my brain that almost forgot. I was like, oh, that's right. He's still got a year left because it's been a while because of all that. Coach, as we wrap this one up, one last bullet point we wanted to get into was investing in the community. And that's so critical with what, you know, any program, whether it's Alabama or the University of Northern Colorado or Colorado State, CU, whatever. What does that mean to you? What are you guys doing to really bring that, you know, to the forefront?
Well, the bottom line test for us is we've got to bring wins. And I was just actually talking with President Feinstein yesterday. He invited me to go have lunch with the mayor, John Gates.
Oh, cool.
I hadn't met Mayor Gates in person before, so it was really good. But then just on the way back, we started talking and catching up about the team, just like you and I are talking here. And Andy said, you know, I just want to make sure that you know that, like, we believe in you and the way that you're going. And for me, it's just much more important that, you know, that the players have a great experience that they can take on with them for the rest of their lives. And I said, well, you know, you're going to have to judge me harshly when it comes time to renew my contract, because I'm going to tell you right now, if we're doing it right, we will win. So that is the litmus test for football. So that's number one. When we talk about getting involved in the community, supporting the community, we got to bring a winning football program to Greeley. I understand that. But we also want to look for opportunities to support in the way that we hope to be supported on our game days. And so a big game day for our Special Olympics community this past weekend at Greeley West High School was the Special Olympics weightlifting. Mm. And it was about 20, 25 competitors in there going through their bench squat and deadlift competition. And our entire offensive line and defensive line went, and they were the weight spotters and helped with organization and really just bringing some energy and cheering on the gang there. So that was that was one way that we could get involved in the community last week. We're always looking for opportunities to do that, to support. I think, you know, a rising tide raises all ships, and we hope we want to be one of the catalysts for raising Greeley and this surrounding community up.
I don't know if you had a chance yet, Coach. I know with your schedule, it's crazy, but we did base you bringing this guy up, Miles McClarity. We brought him in, did a special podcast with him last week. He mentioned that. He mentioned the Special Olympics weightlifting thing. And he said he was blown away at how many people were just like, yeah, we want to get involved in that. And so because we were talking about the culture, and he just raved, and he was absolutely mesmerized by the fact that so many people were just like, we're in, let's go. And I think, again, that points to, over these last 10 episodes, we're talking about a culture. It's all these things come together, and then you see guys willing to just step up, take their own time, go out and do something really, really powerful like this.
It was fun. I remember the team meeting he was referencing because I had to shut it down a little bit because I wanted it to be O-line, D-line if they would volunteer.
And yeah.
That gym is only going to hold so many. We can't take 87 guys over there, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I said, hey, fellas, I've got a special needs son. I know a lot of these kids that are going to be competing. They kind of gravitate towards the big guys, especially in the weightlifting part of the Special Olympics. So can we get the big guys? Can I see
Makes
a show
sense.
Of hands?
Yeah.
And it was like, I didn't even finish the sentence and the whole O-line and D-line were like raising their hand. Like, I got this, coach. We're there. And they hang together as a group and they put on a really amazing show.
That stuff gives me goosebumps though, to hear that kind of thing. Another thing I just wanted to point out too with Miles, he said he had – obviously, his story is fantastic, and thank you for helping us kind of shed some light on that, a couple weeks ago. He brought up the fact that he missed a practice because he wasn't feeling very good or a workout or something like that. And it was supposed to be that one of the dinners that you talked to us about where there's position group dinners or just younger guys, and he was supposed to come to your place for one of those dinners. He said he felt guilty for missing one of the workouts, so he's like, I don't know if I should go to the dinner, and he heard from you – and you were like, yeah, get out here, man. I was letting my wife listen to that. She's getting the tears in her eyes. Yeah. She's getting emotional. But again, I think that speaks so much to what you guys are all trying to provide here with this program.
Yeah, it was. I felt like it was a failure on my part. So we were at that position group dinner, had all the defensive backs over, and the DBs were out, many of them for the first time in their life touching a horse and holding a chicken, we're at them out in the barn and got the horses out and they were brushing the horses are shedding like crazy this time of year. And Miles, I suddenly realized Miles is not here. And so I texted him, hey man, what's going on? Are you feeling all right? My first thought was, oh my gosh, he had his treatment and he's not feeling good. And he texted me back, coach, I couldn't go to practice. I didn't feel well enough to go to practice, so I thought that I wouldn't be welcome at that dinner. I was like, oh, what a failure on my part. So I texted him back, you're welcome now and any day, any time. The whole point of having you guys over is so that you know where I live and you know that this place is open to you. You need something, show up. You don't have to ask. You don't have to text. Just show up.
I love that so much. He's one of – and again – I think I talked about on the podcast. I said if all the football players are like this kid for the UNC for UNC football, man, you're talking about investing in the community. People are going to get behind those guys. He shows up here in an Uber. My brain doesn't process things like it should. Coach shows up here, and then we're doing the middle of the podcast. He's like, "Yeah, I just got to Uber out of here." It's like, you don't have a car? He's like, well, I told you I had to Uber over here this morning. I said, dude, I will take you to campus. We'll get you back home or get you back over there. But he's just like a lot of these guys. They don't want to impose, I guess. But that's also such a nice compliment because they're so polite. And then what you're doing with these dinners, I think it really impacts them in such a great way, maybe beyond even what you realize at this stage.
Well, it's my vision, but the feedback is so important, and I'll just give you a couple of examples. But when you talk to Miles, I think he's representative of especially of our first couple of classes here and the third class we're building. They're local guys, number one. Their parents are local. And when I say local, I mean Colorado. There's a certain amount of pride in representing this place. Also, their parents are close by. Like, they're part of this media community. They hear what's going on. They see what's going on. They show up at practice. They show up at games. Like, our players realize that there's a little extra pressure. They carry themselves in a completely different way. And I just had our equipment man say yesterday, we had a little issue where one of the guys, we had issued, we do these gear drops and sometimes it's small. It's probably not like what Colorado's gear drops are, right? But we passed out some slides and a hat, and one of the guys didn't get it. He came to me, hey coach, my slides and my hat, it wasn't in my, what's called the pass-through locker. It wasn't in there. I don't know what happened. And so we're kind of, taking a look at it, man, did somebody else get in that locker? Did somebody steal it? We don't know. But as I was discussing it with our equipment man, hey, how can we make sure this doesn't happen? Let's get this guy's gear and stuff like that. And then, I said, I think when we get this team where it's going to be, our first inclination's not going to be that it was stolen, right? Like, that's not what winning teams do. They don't steal each other's gear. And they have trust that they're all going to get their gear, right? And Sean, the equipment guy, Sean Marcus, he's been around a long time. He's been, he's equipment man at Cal, and a lot of experience. He said, you keep bringing in the guys that you're bringing in. there's already a big difference just in the way that they treat me, their gratitude for what they do get instead of complaining about what they're not getting. Just like more of those guys, coach. And then we got the same feedback from one of our senior women's administrator, Rachel Walton. There was an activity that the whole athletic department, all the freshmen had to go to. And she just texted me after and said, I just want you to know that your freshmen were the star of the show. And usually the football freshmen are like a real problem every time we get the athletic department together. But these guys were engaged. They were respectful and represented the team really well. So that's the kind of feedback I'm looking for. Thanks for the feedback on Miles, though. I certainly could have predicted that he would put on a great impression.
Well, first off, I mean, outside of football, he's probably got a radio career too. He's got that deep voice,
doesn't he? Yeah.
But he just has a great you know way of looking at things. And again, I think he's just so appreciative for the opportunity to be on your football team. So it's exciting, coach. And one of the things that my biggest takeaway from these 10 episodes so far is when you talk about building a culture. It's not just a coach coming in and saying, here's my philosophy, here it is, go. There's a lot of work that goes into it. The scheduling, the workouts, the dinners, just the way practice is. That by itself is big. When you're trying to change a culture over, there's a lot to it. And I know we barely scratched the surface on that, but I'm really appreciative for what we've uncovered so far.
I appreciate the chance to kind of review it each week and talk about it and get it out there. Our job in many ways as coaches is public perception, and I think there's a lot to be proud of right now from my perspective about this team and about these players and about the direction they're going. It will show up on the field. And to have these chances to kind of talk it through just gets me more excited for the season.
I joked with Miles when I gave him a ride to campus, back to campus, and I just said, I love covering all these teams up here in Northern Colorado. That's what we pride ourselves on. But I said, doing these podcasts with Coach every single week I feel a deeper connection. So, you know, wins, losses, whatever, I'm going to be more emotional, probably the most emotional I've ever been when it comes to UNC football. So I have you to thank for that, Coach.
Hey, we're investing in it. Thanks for the time.
All right, Coach, we'll let you out of here. Shoot me over that depth chart when you can. We'll get that out on social media. No, I would never do that. But yeah, but seriously, bring it over when you can.
Will do. We'll try to prepare for that next week.
We'll let you get after it, and we'll get after our podcast, episode 11, coming up next week. Good luck the rest of the week, Coach.
Thanks.